Thursday, April 13th, woke up at 7. That delicious noise on the roof had continued into the night, but the total of rain was only 1 1/10 inch. Still, that was a glorious victory, and you had the feeling that the cycle had been broken and that it would happen over and over. I drove into town to meet Buzz and Mr. Drexler at the Driscoll, arriving at 10 o'clock, and we went to the university to see the site of the Lyndon Johnson Library. It is changing miraculously. Many houses have been moved off, and great gaps have appeared among the trees, and you see them better, the trees, the bluffs, the lay of the land. There are some magnificent live oaks on Red River, east northeast of the stadium. We picked up Max, and he pointed out to us the planned position of the podium, though when the site is entirely cleared, it may well move a few feet. We walked along, eagerly taking it in, and the surroundings, the beautiful rolling expanse of open space, over toward the new law building and to the Texas Memorial Museum, Clark Field, which will come out. Max had the crushing news that someday, not too far off, a new building would go up in part of that open space. As I walk a drive around the campus, I'm cruelly aware of how crowded it is becoming. 40 acres is now just an affectionate term, but however big it is, the growth from the 6,000 that I remember to today's 26,000 has meant the loss of open spaces and of red poppies in April, of little pools and fountains, and even of gigantic live oaks. And I hate to see it happen farther. We walked down the hill past the stadium to the art building. I pointed out the Texas Memorial Museum, telling Mr. Drexler that this might possibly be the material of which the Lyndon Johnson Library would be built. The bid would go out for possibly 3 materials, and then the decision be made. And then we spent a very interesting, exciting hour. We joined Chancellor Ransom and Mrs. Hudspeth in a room of the art building, which incidentally I do not like, and saw a display which they had arranged on a long table of valuable documents in their collection that relate to the presidency and that will go in to the Lyndon Johnson Library. Fascinating objects of great worth. One, a letter from George Washington to General Knox after the defeat of the British Army. I never knew George Washington could be so passionate. It went something like this: Dear Knox, all that I have or shall ever have, I give to you. I know not how true the news of complete victory is, but you and your troops will ever be honored by this country. And a delightful letter from Fulton, pointing out that he had just made some rather interesting discoveries. And then there were presidential portraits. A Stuart of George Washington, a jewel by someone I don't remember, of Abraham Lincoln, some mediocre, one I thought quite awful, an interesting collection of FDR memorabilia, including campaign buttons from every campaign, and talk between Dr. Ransom and Mr. Drexler of a professional flavor about the use of computers in libraries, the training on the campus for making exhibits. We planned to get him back early the next morning to look more thoroughly over the possessions of the university and to meet some of the young people who have been arranging exhibits. Dr. Ransom was quite calm, in spite of the fact that this is the weekend of Roundup, the annual looked-for great splash of the university when all the fraternity houses are decorated and there are floats and everybody has a wild time and a lot of old-time graduates return. And this year there will be one very unwelcome visitor come to make trouble, Stokely Carmichael of SNCC. It's like coming on Christmas Eve. I pray the press and the students give him a very quiet time. It had been a very early breakfast for me, coffee only, and I was delighted to get to Mi Casa Su Casa a little past noon for a delicious Mexican lunch. No matter how often we have it at home, it's never quite the same as at some good Mexican place, and I relished it with abandon. It was so cozy. As soon as I walked in, I saw Joe Batson and Ben Bynum came over and spoke, and everybody seemed to smile with interest and then go right on past. Nobody except the waiter asked me for an autograph, and yet I felt lots of people knew me. We dropped Buzz off back at the Driscoll. He had to catch a plane returning to Washington. Actually, his presence had added more substance, more direction, more good meat to the day than mine or anybody's except Dr. Ransom. I feel he is a primary asset in this. Yet, I have not been able to get him to produce, on paper and in my hand, That scenario, or libretto, whatever you call it, that story we wish to tell, to put into an exhibit design man's hands, to work from. During the morning, we had been to Max's office and had seen once more the model of the university, way out the library would fit in, and had seen the plans for the mall that would be a strong feature of the area, extending from the northeast entrance of the main building, the tower, right on down the hill over Walla Creek and up past the stadium
to the hill on which the library sits.
It is not on a direct axis with the library building itself, but I think it is beautifully, harmoniously designed.
And Drexler had had all the time he wanted to ask questions of Max about the model of the library, which he again explored. After lunch, Max and Mr. Drexler and I went to the Headliners Club, high in a building that looks down, and I regard it with indignation, on the capital of the state of Texas. It was, however, a magnificent view. My purpose in going, really, was to see the Robert Joy portrait of Lyndon, which he had done from photographs without even meeting Lyndon, no posing. I liked it fairly well. It was photographic, but it had some strength and a sense of action. From there, Mr. Drexler and I drove home, stopping at Johnson City. It was not open to the public today. But as we stopped, a car drove up, and Papa was busily taking a picture of Mama, who stood under the sign, while a friend stood by and gave directions. Then they recognized me.
And were full of excitement, and words tumbled out. Whoever would thought we'd have seen you? This makes our trip. My, this is exciting. I hoped Mr. Drexler got some sense of their feeling, because there will be thousands upon thousands of people like this who will go through the library and who will not
be more interested in Lucy's wedding dress and Lyndon's fourth grade report card
than they will in the congealed essence of his legislative achievements, no matter how dramatically we present them. And we must remember both sides. We took a brief trip through the house. He was only mildly interested. I explained everything full of bright interest, but after a while, beginning to feel like a record that was running down when I did not get much response. And then we drove on and stopped at the cemetery and drove through it. Here, too, he was mildly interested, perhaps a little more so. And I showed him the house where Lyndon was born, explaining the history of it and how we had put it together. But because he did not seem interested enough, I decided not to take him through it. I showed him his room at the Cedar House. Tonight, I would spend in the children's room, following my program of a new room each night. And then, with the day approaching its end, I asked him if he would like to drive into Fredericksburg and see this early German town and see a restoration of the old courthouse, mainly because I myself wanted to see it, and I will not be able to be here on the celebrating day of May the 7th when it is open to the public. His response was, just whatever you would like to do. And this is mildly deflating
when you're devoting the whole day
to explaining, interpreting your country, your people, your background to someone who in turn, you hope, will absorb and explain to a wider public. But I tried to reach Mrs. Mosley and Mrs. Covert, finally succeeded, and we departed for Fredericksburg. It was an interesting, worthwhile hour.
Mrs. Covert and the Mosleys met us at the door of the courthouse and took us through this old Victorian structure, built, I believe, in the late 1880s. High ceilings, lacy wrought iron, handsome brass hardware made in the 1860s. It's an interesting story. The Mosleys, he's an architect and she's an interior decorator, had made a hobby of doing over old Fredericksburg homes. They'd shown a visitor through several wealthy people from Dallas, the McDermotts. And then they'd pointed out this old building that they hated to see abandoned to uselessness. And the McDermotts had offered to help restore it. What to? The Mosleys were quick with ideas. The bottom for a city library. They had only the tiny octagonal kirky, the early pioneer church, and the top to a community center where they could have meetings, maybe even wedding receptions. So it's been done, and very well, I thought. The old doors showing off to best advantage. Quietly handsome colors throughout. And the most amazing handmade tapestry on the wall. A sort of a montage of Fredericksburg. Indians and German immigrants in deer and covered wagons and peaches and blue bonnets. Done in a variety of needlework and applique. Creative and bright and interesting. I think this is the old courthouse where Uncle Clarence Martin used to preside as judge. There was a tiny private stairway for the judge into his chambers. There was one room that contained the early German book collection, some of them going back to the 1840s, Goethe and Schiller. And then a history of the First World War printed in Berlin in German, very prominent pictures of the Kaiser and Hindenburg, an amazing country, America. The most pleasing thing to me was Mrs. Covert's pride in showing it off, and the Montgomerys in having worked on it. They were so enthusiastic. It is a real community achievement. We rode home in the twilight to join Jesse and Homer Thornberry, Eloise off working on the committee for the deaf. Homer laughed and said she was educating him all about the deaf and their problems. And Olga, they'd come out for dinner. We drove around the Martin and the dance. Rejoiced in last night's 1-inch rainfall. Looked at the new moon and the deer and the wild turkey. The gobblers are spreading their tails now. And their wattles are so much redder. And their beards bluer and their breasts more bronze because it is mating season now. And this is the first time I ever really noticed their beards. Once a family of quails walked across the road. It is not the brilliant spring of 65 or 66, but the air is warm, and it is good to be here. We went home for a pleasant dinner, during which Mr. Drexler said very little, and I could not find the cord to get a response, and it was an early bedtime for us all. Jesse joined him at the guest house, and I slept in the children's room, my third night of exploration.